Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the mountain hiker to my cliffhanger, it's Dan.
Good evening, Scott. I like how you brought cliffhanger into this, considering what we're going to talk about first tonight.
Yep, that was the idea. And luckily,
you're
actually an active person, so the mountain hiker thing actually fits for a change.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, we should say that we are being joined once again by the full complement of our STVD All-Star Super Squad. And there's a reason I added Super to that. And the comic geeks will pick up on it. The Power Girl, by way of Illinois. It's Vicky. You can speak, Vicky, you know. I think Vicky's on mute or something.
Talk now. Lee,
it's me, Vicky. I'm going to give it a 5. I didn't really like it, but I'm giving it a 5 anyway.
I really liked it. We also have, I'm sure she'll reappear momentarily. Maybe she's indisposed or fixing the clock that hasn't run yet. I don't know. So the Star Spangled Kid from Louisiana, it's Cade.
Hi, everybody.
And you can't have a true super squad without our own Robin from Kentucky. It's Jason.
Holy cow, Batman. You gave me Robin.
Well, Vicky seems to be having some microphone difficulties. Hopefully that will be sorted out momentarily. I can't recall if after the last 2 years of doing this with you guys, if I've ever actually said on the podcast where the whole All-Star Squad thing came from. Did I ever mention it? Have I ever mentioned it at all?
I
don't know. It's possible at the beginning you did.
Maybe early on.
I don't think I ever did. I think that was deliberate. I always meant to explain it, and I never got around to it. Well, really quickly, back in the 70s, when there was a bit of a revival in comics with the Justice Society of America, they had this little sub-team that was called like the Super Squad, or sometimes on the comic book covers we'd call the All-Star Super Squad. Not to be confused with the All-Star Squadron, which came a few years later. And the All-Star Super Squad basically consisted of Power Girl, Star-Spangled Kid, and the Earth 2 Robin. There may have been one or two other members that I'm forgetting. They seem to always be working with the Justice Society, so it seemed like they're just members of the Justice Society, but not true members. They were like, you know, kind of like when you'd watch Saturday Night Live, they were like featured players or something like that. So that's where the name actually came from. And look, Vicky's voice has changed and she's back. You sounded,
yay!
I was wondering why you sounded so much like Dan before, but now
because I haven't really hit puberty. It might be a factor.
Oh my god. Was it in the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes movie? There's that song called Puberty Love. Anyway, getting off track already. Apologies to our listeners, however many there may be, that it has actually taken us this long to get to our, what I call our final finale podcast. And guess what? We're going to make you wait just a little bit longer because we want to engage in a little bit of a movie talk here first. Namely, give each of us a chance to weigh in on a movie now we have all seen. That itself is kind of a rarity, I think. The latest Marvel Studios flick, and I'm talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So I'd like to go around the room, you know, everyone just, you know, weigh in. What'd you think of the movie? Likes, dislikes, whatever. I get the impression it went over pretty fairly very well with some of you guys. So let's start with the person who I think saw it first, so I'll give him the first crack at this. Jason, I know you've seen it a number of times, so how did you, beyond that, what did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
I loved it. It's probably my favorite Marvel film ever. There's a lot of heart in this movie. It just goes beyond what the first one did. It went deeper into the family issues and Peter's dad and all that stuff, and you know, you even got a little bit of a Star Wars feeling to it. I'm not the first one to say this. I read it online, but no, when I was in the theater, I was like, wow, this is a whole lot like Empire Strikes Back, it seems like to me. Plus the soundtrack was fantastic. I actually bought the soundtrack in the theater as the credits were rolling the first time.
but you did it in between like the five post credit scenes, I'm guessing.
Yes, I did.
I was thinking, wow, kind of overkill, guys, and none of this actually leads to the next film, but I did enjoy that. Okay, so I'm getting the impression you might not have much to critique about it, because it sounds like you loved it, you know, unconditionally, which is awesome. I'm glad you had such a great time with it. Vicky, how did you feel about it? I know you've seen it a couple times as well.
Yeah, I saw it twice. Actually, they were both in the same day. but yeah, no, I thought it was fantastic. I don't know. I think maybe I liked it just not quite as good as the first one. But I mean, that's not to say that I didn't love it. I think everything was fantastic. It definitely brought up some emotions, you know, with Yondu and all of that. And I thought the de-aging that they did on Kurt Russell at the beginning was like fantastic. And I was reading an article, and I guess pretty much all of that was done with makeup. So it wasn't like CG or anything. So.
Really? That was all makeup?
Yeah,
I had
that
no
was
idea.
Like his makeup guy.
He should.
He hasn't exactly aged poorly, but still, that's really nicely done.
He should get his makeup guy to work on it. I don't know if they've ever gotten married, but is his lifelong mate? She could just saying.
Yeah, he was saying if he could afford to have this guy with him every day, he would.
Wow. I am truly astonished that was purely makeup. I just assume they did the same thing that they've done in a few other Marvel movies, like with Michael Douglas in Ant-Man and stuff. But wow, makeup, that's impressive. I may fact check you, but I believe you're right. So that's just stupid. You know what? If that should be nominated for best makeup then, because that's a really impressive job.
Seriously, yeah. And then I also really loved everything going on with Nebula and Gamora. I thought that was interesting, just from them trying to kill each other and seeing, oh, maybe, you know, their situation was different from how they actually perceived it to be.
Right. Yeah, I get the impression that I saw the damn movie myself. But there's a lot of different family themes running throughout this film and different types of family units. I mean, the fact that the team themselves refer to themselves as a family, and that's a strong theme in this movie as well. So, that was one of the things that I kind of really hooked into in this movie as well. Dan, I know you saw it, and you actually saw it with the kids, right?
Yeah, I took them Tuesday night. It took us a while because of a variety of things, such as tornadoes and being really busy. But yeah, a very good movie. The first one is my favorite Marvel film, probably by a long shot. And it's been too soon. I really can't say if I like this one better or worse. It'll end up being the kind of thing where like the first one was so surprisingly good, it'll be kind of hard to like get better than that. But as like a, you know, as a, like the way the film was constructed, it was, you know, really nicely done. There is some fun like Easter egg stuff that I kind of appreciated, like seeing some like, you know, like the Marvel cosmic characters, like, you know, doing some things like just briefly while they were doing their like 700 jumps thing towards the end was, you know, there's stuff like that I appreciated. And there really wasn't any other than Mantis's voice being like as annoying as a voice can possibly get. And I just wanted to like, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like the worst thing in the world, but like thinking back about it, it's just like, I hate that voice. Screw that terrible voice that they're using this, you know, making this actress do. Unless she just sounds like that, in which case, like, okay. But yeah, really nicely done. I did think while I was watching it, I was like, this is a good movie for the kids. You know, I can, you know, I like how they're doing this. And then there's a scene where like Yondu kills like 1,000 fucking people at once. With his arrow, I'm just like, there's a zillion people getting killed. This is awesome. Like, this is like, it didn't bother me, but I'm just like, whoa. I mean, things have really changed because there's just like lots and lots and lots of killing going on here, and it's being done in like a really fun way that's like, you know, I'm a little hardcore when it comes to such things, but I appreciated that and found it to be pretty just interesting how, you know, times have changed apparently.
Right. Dan, you touched on that was my favorite scene of the whole film.
Huh.
Was that, and the accompanying song that went with it was fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, which 70s song was it again? Just
remember. Just a little bit closer.
That's right. I gotcha. Kay, what did you feel about it?
I really, really enjoyed this movie. I don't want to say it's better than the first one. I think they're equal because they have their differences in the type of story they told. I enjoyed this one mostly for the fact it showed that Marvel was willing to embrace some of the weirder side of the comic books, whereas some of the movies have strayed away trying to come up with more real world here. They realize we're in space, we're dealing with aliens, so of course you actually do Ego as a living planet instead of some other way of doing him. And in fact, There was the scene where they go into space and the Ravager ship, and you see the giant face form on the planet.
Right.
That was a moment that was like, oh, that's really good. They're really embracing that. Maybe there was a smidge too much going on. Maybe too many storylines they wanted to put too much into, possibly. But I only watched it once, so maybe if I see it again, it won't stick out as much. But I really did enjoy this movie, and I'm looking forward to more of the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe for the movies if they get to it.
Huh. Cool. I liked it. I don't think I would embrace as much as I did the first one, but it's kind of, I think my way of thinking is very similar to what Dan said. The first one took me by such surprise, and like Dan, that's also my favorite Marvel movie to date, because I thought it just took the most chances and just and was fun, way funnier than I ever expected, and so on and so forth. This one, it has the benefit of, you know, most of the characters going into it, so they've already been established. So they already had a kind of chemistry and rapport between them. I personally did feel, especially some of the earlier scenes. I know the first one was very funny. Some of the comic dialogue going back, going back and forth, didn't really work for me. It felt a little bit, we need to make the scene funnier, and it just wasn't written as funny as I think the first movie tended to be. So that kind of fell flat at certain points for me. I did like the movie overall. I'm a sucker for Rocket and Baby Groot was great. Although, I mean, on one hand, I do miss, you know, full-grown Groot, because I love that character. But Baby Groot was a more than adequate substitute. I mean, adorable, let's admit it.
Delightful.
But for me, I still think, Rocket Raccoon is still my favorite character in both films. It's my favorite work that Bradley Cooper's ever done, quite frankly. other than maybe Alias or something. And I think I was more emotionally touched by that. And I'll say the one surprising thing about this film, which is why I think I might have liked it even more than I did at a certain point in the film, the stuff with Yondu was surprisingly effective, because he was he was like a semi-villain in the first movie, you know, at best an anti-hero, but kind of a sort of villainous, you know, who ends up aligning with them, whatever. The fact that they made us, or they made me, care that much about him and his actual relationship with Peter, and that he really was his dad all those years and everything. That worked surprisingly well for me. I really did enjoy that. I enjoyed all the Ravager stuff. I got a real kick out of that. All the stuff with Taserface did make me laugh. I think that worked a lot better than the stuff with the stuff with the Sovereigns never really quite worked for me. I mean, I like the idea of the video game like way of fighting their battles, but just as characters, I think maybe that was played just a little bit too goofy for me, especially knowing what they lead to.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, when one of those post-credit sequences, that's leading to Adam Warlock, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not the biggest Marvel aficionado, but I remember the stuff with Adam Warlock and Thanos and Captain Marvel and all that crap. And he's a major player. So I kept thinking, really, these gold-skinned doofuses are going to be the ones behind, you know, creating, or whatever you want to call it, Adam Warlock? Like, okay. But overall, I mean, I really enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I'm glad I spent the money to see it, especially when I found out that my local theater has $6 Wednesdays. So it only cost me $6.
That's the best time.
And when you're in New York City, where tickets range can go as high as 13 or 15, or if you go see it on IMAX, it's 20-something bucks, $6 is awesome. So, yeah, I really liked it. Like I said, my only criticisms were really... I thought some of the comedy stuff didn't play as well, and that's really kind of it. I think I really enjoyed the rest of it. I can't remember the last time I was in a movie theater watching Kurt Russell. I can't remember the last time I saw Kurt Russell in a movie in a theater.
Yeah.
So that was just nice to see him, because, I mean, Kurt Russell is one of those go-to great legendary action heroes from the early 80s, as far as I'm concerned. So it was pretty awesome.
Well, I can tell that none of us watch the Fast and the Furious films.
Yeah. I've not seen one, so I can't.
And one of my favorite things that James Gunn did in this film was that he took the Baby Groot thing that was dancing at the end of the first film. And he's like, okay, we're just going to give it to you here at the beginning. We're going to get it out of the way so you don't have to worry about the rest of the film. We're going to focus away from that. I like that part.
Oh, the opening credits sequence.
Like a delight.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the Baby Groot stuff going in, and this, you know, like, at the end of the movie, I thought it was kind of lame at the end of the last movie, and going into this, I was kind of dreading it somewhat, but I didn't care, you know. Pretty much by the end of the opening title sequence, we're like, there's an awesome, like, boss battle going on, and, like, they're just, like, not paying any attention to it all, and I just thought that was so fun and audacious. I just, you know, I got over it pretty much instantly.
Yeah,
right. It took a good chance.
I thought that was great. I don't agree with... There were some people who... I don't know if it was someone here or someone else on the Book of Faith or whatever, who had... Might have been one of the people who actually spoiled the opening sequence by mentioning what song was playing during it, which I would have rather not known going into it. They said that it was better. It was the best opening sequence ever, better than the Deadpool one. I don't agree with that. I still think the Deadpool opening credit sequence is better, but I really did love this one. I really got a big kick out of it, so I would say that.
I enjoyed how they didn't, like, Chris Pratt's character wasn't, like, as much of a doofus this time around either. Like, he was able to be kind of a meathead, but it wasn't, like, so, like, just over the top this time, and I kind of, you know, it didn't really fit with the story that they told, but I enjoyed that, you know, he didn't quite have to be such of a, you know, Andy Dwyer the entire fucking movie.
Well, I think that was very deliberate, because they definitely tried to make him far more heroic feeling, because we know he's going to be playing, I mean, they're all going to be playing a part, but especially him in the upcoming, the whole Infinity War thing going on. So,
yeah.
I did notice that, like, oh, he's still funny, but he's not as like, oh, what am I doing? So, yeah, I thought he was great. I mean, I really enjoyed Chris Pratt a lot, and the stuff with, how do you pronounce, is it Gamora? Is that how we pronounce her name?
Gamora,
yep.
I'm known for mispronouncing things. I was iffy on the Mantis stuff too, and apparently the creator of Mantis wasn't too thrilled with this depiction of his character either, so, you know, we're not alone on that one. But overall, I liked it. It sounds like it's like a lot of love, and if not love, at least a very strong like for this film. So definitely one of the better movie-going experiences for all of us, it sounds like.
Yeah, yes, it was.
Definitely.
Cool. And yes, oh, by the way, Jason, yeah, great soundtrack. I don't know if I liked it better than the first movie soundtrack. I think they're on par. It's still... You know, it's basically 70s AM radio soundtrack stylings, you know, so basically James Gunn is once again just borrowing, you know, from Tarantino's Notebook, as far as I'm concerned, but I liked it a lot too.
Yeah, the Cat Stevens songs at the end was very powerful. It was designed to make people cry.
Yeah, it didn't get me. No, I'm kidding. I cry at anything, so it's, I don't count in that kind of a conversation. Hey, before we get to the TV shows, at least got to spend at least a second here. I'm really looking forward to it's playing in theaters right now. It came out, you know, like those Thursday late night showings, I believe. Wonder Woman has come out, and holy crap, it's getting great reviews. Which, especially if you're a DC movie fan, we're not used to this. I don't think we've seen anything like this since the Dark Knight, quite frankly. Last I checked, which was about 10 minutes ago, it was rocking a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes with 164 fresh and only 13 rotten. That's outstanding. That's higher than most any other comic book movie that I can think of. So I'm really looking. I know it doesn't mean anything to you specifically, Dan, but unfortunately it means a lot to a lot of people out there, and it is something that will sway people to go see a movie or not. So the fact that it's got good buzz going into it actually does mean a lot for this movie and the people and the industry, the DC comic universe, and also having a movie fronted by a female superhero, because there's a lot riding on this movie, much more than, say, even Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, quite frankly.
No, I was going to say, you know, I'm more of a Marvel movie guy, even though I really like the Batman movies and Man of Steel. I enjoyed a lot, actually. But no, I'm glad it's getting good press. I get kind of tiresome, got kind of tiresome when, like, Suicide Squad and the Batman Superman thing came out, and then you just got all these fucking just internet douchebags just being, like, so predictably, like, you know, like, arrogant about it. And, like, I'm really glad they can't do that this time. I mean, I suppose they can still try and, like, do whatever, but, like, their voice is much quieter this time around, so fuck them, good job. And it'd be nice if, like, you know, I mean, there's no, like, the DC movies being good doesn't, like, make the Marvel movies, like, you know, any better or worse. It, like, it doesn't have to be a fucking dick measuring contest, because anybody that thinks it is, they're gonna lose that fucking contest against me, I'll fucking tell you. But
right, it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. We could, like, both companies, you know.
Yeah,
I want Justice League to be good. I want that Flash to be, you know, I want that Flash to be a good, interesting Flash. It's, you know, I'll probably like Arbery a little bit better, but, you know, whatever. They can both be fucking good. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind going as far as, you know, I don't mind comparing, contrasting, because one does that with all sorts of films, whether it be different types of science fiction, horror, whatever. But when it becomes the whole, why is one beating the other? Like, it's not, it's not sports. They're not in the same league with each other. You know, there's room for everyone to do well. It's so one doing well doesn't damage the other one, and vice versa. You know, so DC's had its setbacks. They didn't go, you know, they didn't take the big chance that Marvel did many years ago, which obviously has turned out to be a brilliant move, slowly building their universe. And DC kind of doing this fits and starts thing of trying to jumpstart it too fast. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to deny there aren't major issues with Batman v Superman, and especially Suicide Squad, which, you know, has a lot of good in it, but also has a lot of crap in it, and should have been, you know, I wrote a positive review of it, so obviously I must have liked it, but I also kind of ignored a lot of the crap I hated in it. But this looks really like it's a really good, fun, uplifting, cool movie, and hopefully that bodes well for the future of the DC, what do they call it, the DCEU, I guess they're referring to it as. Justice League, it's going to be a crapshoot. It could be great, it could be horrible. There was some interesting and unfortunate news that, you know, we know that Zack Snyder was directing it and such. He actually had to step away from the film due to a family tragedy that happened to him. I think his daughter actually committed suicide, if I'm not mistaken. So he had to step away from the film, and they actually got Joss Whedon to come in. So Joss Whedon is going to work on a lot of the post-production. He may need, from what I've heard, he may need to film a few additional scenes, and iron some things out. So it's just nice that they've got someone well accomplished to help step in and do it. But it was kind of a sad moment to hear that, because, you know, whatever our issues might have been with Zack Snyder, what he's done, I mean, no, I wouldn't wish that on someone I hated, much less someone, you know, I'm kind of iffy on. So, but wow, what a bummer thing for me to mention at the end of this. But anyway, okay, should we get to the main reason we're actually here tonight, to get to those finales?
Let's do it.
All right, so we do have three big final episodes to discuss tonight, so let's not waste any more time, and let's leap right into The Flash. Now, the season finale of The Flash was titled Finish Line, so I will try to do my little recap here. It may not be so little, so I apologize for that in advance. I don't know what the hell I was doing when I was writing this up. Okay, so we also pick right up where we left off with Barry cradling the dying Iris in his arms. Except, as we were talking about, a few weeks ago, it turns out not to be Iris. After all, it's HR who used that transforming, transconfiguring what's-his to switch places with Iris while she was being held captive by Savitar, who conveniently left her on the other side of whatever abandoned warehouse he and Frosty were holed up in. But the writer has also made use of that little bit of Savitar, that plot point used earlier this season, to explain how HR tracked them down. I don't know why no one else thought to do that, but anyway. It's actually pretty sad, but we're made happy soon after when Harry Wells shows up. And there is an implication he might be sticking around for a while, so yay to that. Now, Savitar captures Sisko and forces him to retool the Speed Force bazooka so he can exist in every moment of time ever. So therefore, the time paradox can never quite catch up to him, and thus he will be immortal. Okay. So the threat he holds over Sisko's head isn't for his life, but that of Caitlin Killer Frost Snow. And by the way, just in time for the finale, we learn that Julian has been working on Caitlin's super smart mom to devise a cure to turn her back into a non-meta once again. But the story takes an even more unexpected and therefore welcome twist by having Barry, inspired, I suppose, by the words of Leonard Snart of all people, to be more a true hero and try some simple diplomacy. A way to help his model-faced doppelganger survive. Because by not killing Iris, he's actually going to blink out of existence within a few hours. You know, once that slow-moving wave of the time paradox catches up to his original creation years from now. This is one of those questionable bits of logic, but I think we can liken it to the vanishing family members in Marty McFly's Polaroid. Use that as the explanation to how that works. However, despite their best intentions, this plan doesn't quite work out, so Savitar goes back to his I'm-gonna-be-a-god kick with the help of that time-splitting device he's having Sisko prepare. Of course, Sisko does reset the big gun, but instead he turns into a form of a Speed Force skeleton key, which releases Jay Garrick from Speed Force Purgatory. So we get Wally, Jay, and Barry in action together. I guess they didn't have time to go get Jesse quick, but they did get Gypsy, who apparently has a connection to Sisko and saves his ass earlier in the episode. And although he may only have a few moments of existence left due to how long the episode is, Savitar is going to throw the mother of all temper tantrums and kill everyone. We get that admittedly epic fight between the Flash and Savitar, which even has Barry taking over his armor at one point, but it's Iris who deals the killing blow with the bullet, even though Savitar is erased from existence seconds later. Also later at HR's funeral, we also learn that despite being given the choice by Sisko to take the serum to revert back to normal, Caitlin, or Killer Frost, or whatever we're going to call her now, she declines. More about her later, I'm sure. So all is well that ends well, except suddenly there are ominous clouds gathering over Central City, and streaks of multicolored lightning are raining down, threatening to destroy the city, and I assume, eventually, the world. Because it turns out the Speed Force needs its pound of flesh, or should I say, flash, and Barry, owning up to the fact that, in one way or another, this has all been his fault, he has to man up and take his place in Purgatory for all the dumb decisions we've had to suffer through for the past couple seasons. It's all very sad, even though you know this is all going to get resolved within the first one or two episodes of Season 4. Okay, sorry I went on a bit too long there, but, you know, I haven't had a chance to edit my notes, so fuck it. So, let's talk about the whole bait and switch with HR, which we had speculated about in previous podcasts. So, Cade, how did you think they pulled that off? How did you feel about that specifically? And also, you know, all the HR-related stuff, the sadness and emotion and whatnot.
I think it works out. I mean, they had been setting up the whole face change thing since the beginning, so you could see it going to happen. The whole Caitlin being, you know, just in a warehouse, kind of iffy, that they just weren't paying attention to her.
Iris,
sorry. The one thing about it is, I don't think they made you care enough about HR through the entire season. Maybe in these last few, they actually, to where that really had an impact on you as a viewer, at least for me, because I just felt he did it because he screwed up. That wasn't as if I I didn't have a feeling of like he felt he was truly becoming a hero by doing it, which they wanted, because you never had any connection with him. They made him such a strange character that you couldn't really latch on to. I mean, I liked him, but I wouldn't latch on to where this had any impact as far as that goes. And I think that could have been handled a little better over the season if they had planned it the whole time, which I kind of think they did. Since they introduced the whole he can switch his face thing early, that was a really unnecessary thing to set up unless you plan to use it later on. And they did at this point.
Hmm. Okay, Jason, how did you feel about it then?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I never really did like HR. It always seemed like a doofus with drumsticks, but... you know, but Cade's right, you know... They introduced that technology earlier in the season for a reason, and you could see that they had a plan. Whether or not we like the plan or not, that's subjective and completely up to us. Frankly, I didn't like HR as much as I like Harry, or as much as we liked the first season as well. But at least he went out a hero.
Yeah, he had a redeeming moment, I guess, of after a season of meh. Dan, I remember you not really being thrilled with this theory to begin with, so I'm anticipating what your reaction was, but so what was it after all?
I thought they executed it, at least this part of the episode, somewhat well. I mean, it definitely still kind of feels like there's some, like, you know, I mean, even though they planted seeds for it, I mean, it still kind of feels like the Walking Dead crap did to me, and I guess that's what sometimes with what TV shows do. So maybe Iris wasn't under a dumpster, but I don't know if I was a big fan of that, but I thought it was a bummer that HR perished, even though there was really nothing to, you know, do with him at any point in the future. I've, you know, bigger issues with stuff later in the episode, but for this part of the show, wasn't bad.
Oh. Well, let's talk a bit more about the rest of the episode, especially the bulk of it dealing with the whole trying to reason with Savitar all the way to the final battle. Since I'm talking to you, I don't want you. Now you can pick up where you left off. Since it sounds like you had some issues, so let's hear them.
This trying to reason with Savitar thing just doesn't work in like a 1 hour episode. There just isn't enough time for all that thing to play out properly, and it just ended up feeling like, I mean, there was just no way that was going to work ever in like a season finale of a show. I mean, in concept, it, you know, it sort of makes sense. You know, Barry doesn't want to be a, you know, bad guy and blah, 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 but, I mean, they're just, you know, too much stuff going on, not enough time, and it just didn't work at all.
Yeah. Didn't it feel like that's something that should have happened, like, in, at best, in a penultimate episode, and then it fails,
yeah,
and then leads to, yeah, this? I felt there was, I totally agree with you on this, because I kept thinking, you know, this isn't going to work, so I feel like you're wasting my time. And, I mean, obviously we knew it wouldn't work no matter what, but if it had been given more time to breathe and a bit more plausibility, I would have bought into it. But here it felt kind of like, let's just get right to that and spend 10 minutes doing that, but even though we know it's not going to work. So, yeah, I think that could have worked better in an earlier episode, and I don't think it worked as well here. Jason?
To me, it felt like just padding into the episode. And something like, oh, hey, we forgot this kind of story beat with this character. Maybe we should just introduce this and then just pass right on by it, just like that. It really should have been explored earlier or not explored at all.
Right.
Because as it is, what you get is a rush job and nothing makes sense.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you just killed HR 30 seconds ago. Let's give you a fucking hug.
Yeah, that was really weird. I mean, I know in my recapping, the only thing I really liked about it was I didn't expect it, and I liked him doing something that I didn't expect. I'm not saying right. It worked, because it didn't. But at least I'll just give them points for trying. But it should have been done in a previous episode, and this whole episode should have been about the showdown between them, not this back and forth. And it really, what you just said, absolutely. HR just died. You know, he. 5 seconds ago, this guy was talking about how he wants to murder Iris over and over. And now, like, you know, let's be buddies. I wasn't buying into it at this point. Vicky?
And what was it? You know, Tracy was all hostile towards him. Well, yeah, she had every right to be. She was kind of the only one that, like, her action, you know, her attitude actually made sense towards this whole thing.
Right. Even Joe West was okay with it. What the hell?
Yeah, it was very strange. It didn't work. No.
Yeah. Cade, how did you feel about all the Savitar stuff for the rest of the episode?
It was one of those things, like they said, this is a story they tried to cram into the last episode, whereas, like, the minute, like, Barry figures out who he is, if it, from that point, it was like, let's work to try to help you find a way to make it to where you can exist, you can have a life. Not like this point. This is like, no, this is the point where you have to kill him. That's your option. This is how you have to end it with him. And it has to be done. Leading to, I think, one of my favorite moments in the series, oddly enough, is when Barry used his power to push other Barry out of the Savitar suit and take it over.
Oh, that's great.
Albeit briefly. Oh, yeah. That was one of the coolest moments of Flash using his powers in a way I didn't expect.
That he was
going to do that and push him out. It was like the suit changed color based on what's inside. I was like, this is a moment that, if the season hadn't been so goofy and this worked better, that would have been really amazing. But just in this episode alone, it was, like, surprisingly awesome when Barry did that. I'm like, that's Barry using his powers in ways we really haven't seen him do. And it was nice to see him think about even doing something like that at that point.
Yeah, I would say, excuse me, I really did enjoy the actual, when they finally got to the battle between them. I think the Savitar battles actually have been pretty good this season whenever they've fought each other. And that I liked. But unfortunately, the half hour leading into it was like, meh. And
yeah.
You actually mentioned, you just said something, which is a great point. It should have been shortly after realizing that Savitar is, you know, future Barry or Barry Remnant or whatever the heck we want to call him. That's when the idea to try to help him or save him should have come into play, not, you know, X number of episodes later. So that's a really good point there. So I wish I had thought of it. So another major thing in this episode, storyline, was all the stuff going on with Killer Frost. So, Vicky, and I know it seems like I just go to you deliberately because it's the female thing. Maybe. No. But anyway, it's just the way it worked out. So, how did you feel about where that went? You can talk about, how you felt about it during the course of the episode, but also the interesting turn at the end of what her actual decision turns out to be.
I was really satisfied with it. We were saying she hasn't had much interesting to do except for this, but I think I actually agree with her saying that no, she's not going to take this cure from Julian that he was able to come up with. This is a part of herself, well, basically herself, that she needs to live with now, and she needs to, she doesn't want to be a villain, but so she just needs to learn how to deal with this and make her new identity.
She might want to see a therapist, is what I'm thinking.
She
clearly has some anger issues when she's Killer Frost. Maybe she's angry because she was given so little to do in the first couple seasons. Maybe that's what it's about. One of the things I really liked about the episode was her decision not to go back to being Caitlin.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that means for her character and for that actress for the rest of the show. I don't know if she's still going to be one of the main characters on the show or if she's going to become recurring or not. I haven't heard anything one way or the other, but I think character-wise it's a wise decision.
Yeah, I think it has the opportunity to make for some good material.
And, you know, we could get our dream of, you know, Black Siren, Killer Frost.
Yeah, she needs to move. She needs to move to Star City.
Yeah.
That would be great. And kill off the rest of the team around that we don't like. Cade, what did you think about the Frosty stuff?
I like the decision they made where she's going to have to figure out who she is. Because as Caitlin, they can't write that character for anything. It might as well be a matchstick with her. Killer Frost, we don't want her to be a villain all the time, because we know how they make a villain who's cool and then they disappear forever. So getting an in-between of the two, having that gives her a story to work with. One other thing, so the Black Flash can hunt down Eobard Thawne, kill him, but she can stop him with ice?
Yeah.
That seemed a little like suddenly a jump in power or a huge weakness you think somebody else would have handled before now, but it was interesting to see Savitar stop him before he could get to him. So it was nice that they did have him come back in this to track down Savitar, but I'm looking forward to what they can do with this Caitlin storyline as Killer Frost. It seemed to be when they had Killer Frost, they learned to handle her a little better and at least give us something and give that character something to do. So hopefully they can keep that momentum going into season 4.
Can I make a suggestion to the people on the show? And I don't know if they're going to do this or not. It depends on where they want to go with her character as well as their budget and whether a certain other actress is available or not. If she's going to go off and figure out herself, the whole is she Killer Frost? Is she Caitlin Snow? Is she going to take a whole new name? Who the heck knows? So we're short someone in Star Labs. Hey, can Tracy now just become a member of Team Flash? And and she seems really capable, and we know Anna Dudek is a really good actress, so we know we got someone who's got some chops there. I know she's got a little bit of a goofiness to her, so who cares? Because we just lost HR anyway. So I think that might be a fun way for them to go. I don't know if they're going to do that. I've not heard anything about this, but that would be what I would advocate them doing, quite frankly.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Was there anything else about this episode, or even the season overall, we wanted to talk about? I know we didn't really touch on stuff with Cisco here, but I don't know if there was really much to say. I did like seeing Gypsy show up though, and comment on that connection they have between each other. So we'll see if they explore that more in the fourth season or not. There only seems to be one thing I know about the fourth season, because they keep dropping hints about it by name. It seems really likely that either the major villain or a major villain is going to be a character known as the Thinker, because they keep mentioning the Thinker's actual name on the show. I think it's like either the second or third time I've heard his name dropped by some future character. So I think the thinker is going to be the big bad guy. I don't know if he will be, or it might be like a fake out, like the whole Dr. Alchemy thing turned out to be. Ugh. But can I say once and for all that I haven't gotten a chance to say it all season. I'm not happy with what they did with Dr. Alchemy on this show. I'm just going to say that's not what I wanted. It wasn't Shakade bad, but. But I wasn't thrilled with it, because Dr. Alchemy is a villain who's been around for like 50 something years, and granted a little goofy looking, but I didn't need another Kylo Ren looking like a villain on one of these freaking shows, because now they all look like they're turning out the same looking villains now, and he didn't really do anything which really made me think of Dr. Alchemy. It's like Firestorm not using his transmuting powers in Legends of Tomorrow. Dr. Alchemy never actually does a thing that he's actually can do. I'm like, no, he's got the Philosopher's Stone. He can do really awesome stuff. He's got the transmutation powers and all the other crap too. And we just make him someone who brings back the powers of people from Flashpoint. What? So I'm voting thumbs down on Dr. Alchemy for the season 2.
I like how Shakade is our basement for the villains.
Yeah.
when it's villains that we liked in the comics but then suck on the show, we go to Shakade, because even though I know we have our issues with Mirror Master, Shakade is just awful. Shakade is the no excuse one. When it's a villain I don't really know about, it's the other one the name I always screw up. Potomac. He has the powers of a river.
Potomac. And Jason, instead of basement, there would be swamp too, if we're talking about Shakade.
Yes.
Sure. Jason, Vicky, I'm sorry, go on, Vicky.
Okay, no, I will say that I was perfectly fine with Flash having to go off into the Speed Force prison or whatever, because as we've been saying, he's done a whole lot of stuff that he wasn't supposed to, and just generally messed up things, so I'm perfectly fine with that. I mean, you know, like we were saying, it's only going to be a temporary thing, but still, he needs to answer for his mistakes.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the writer should go into, you know, the Speed Force prison. They should make up for their mistakes.
Except Speedweed, the rest of them.
And also, I would say, Iris actually did something for once. She shot Savitar.
I think Iris has actually had some really decent moments in the last few episodes of the show. So
they remembered she was there and could actually take part in this.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you think you're gonna die, you're gonna step up things. So
I would just mope a lot, but whatever. All right.
I want to say that I hate the whole concept of the Speed Force prison. How it doesn't make a lot of sense that someone's always got to be there.
Yeah, because when did that start?
Yeah. This show?
No, I'm not. I mean, no, I'm not. I mean, no. Forget comic book stuff, because I don't like to do to that extent. But was it ever established that there was always someone there, that's just because Barry starts screwing things up, and therefore they need their like I said, their pound of flash there for some reason. It's like a penance kind
but
of a thing.
The Speed Force prison didn't start till Barry created the thing that trapped Savitar in the Speed Force prison he made, which, and it doesn't make any sense. My brain broke.
It just became an excuse to take people off the board.
Yeah.
And not being used like Wally and Jay.
Yeah.
And now Barry. Just so we can have a cliffhanger for next year.
Well, yeah, plus we get to have another episode where Barry gets to hang out with, like, Speed Force parents, like, for a whole other episode, so they can just, like, shoot the episode in, like, you know, the house set again.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I would love it if we have a season that not just where we don't have a big bad that's a speedster. Hey, how about a season where there's almost hardly any time travel at all? Because he already got another show that deals all, it's all about time travel. So maybe we can, maybe he can bounce from Earth to Earth, but he doesn't, because apparently whenever Barry goes forward or backward in time, he screws things up. So maybe take a break from it. Or maybe invent the goddamn cosmic treadmill already, because he got a goddamn treadmill there. It's fucking, for classic Flash fans, it's like, it's a constant kick in my face. It's like, wait a minute. The Flash, for like 30, 40 years, the way he travels through time is on the cosmic treadmill. They have a fucking treadmill there. They never use it. They come up with this stupid thing like, I'm just gonna run around the lab a bunch of times. Then I'll run so, like, fuck you. I mean, that's even stupider than Superman going around the Earth, because at least that was goofy, but at least, but he reversed the rotation and whatever. That never made any sense, but who cares? I was 8 years old. I loved it. But now I'm like, no, give me my fuck. I got a treadmill toy right here. Fucking use it. Anyway.
I actually believed you could do that as a kid.
Yeah, so did,
yeah, just for, oh my God. Just reverse the Earth.
So did
go
I.
back in time.
I was smart but stupid.
Me too.
All right. I guess now that the season's over, one last thing. So, considering how we felt at the end of last season with the way all the Zoom stuff played out, and it looked like coming into this finale, we were more positive because we thought they were at least doing an incrementally better job over the last few episodes. But it sounds like we did have our issues or major issues with this finale. So now that the season's come to a close, season 3, season 2, I'm going to go around the room. Which did you like better? So I'm going to start with Jason because I don't know. I'm just going to start with you, Jason.
Okay. I liked season 2 better because at least at the end of the finale of season 2, we got Jay Garrick. We got John Wesley Shipp in the Jay Garrick costume. And that was fun. And it was a great big Easter egg for everybody that had been expecting him to be that character all along.
Okay. So you're pinning it all on that one character appearance at the very end. Okay, interesting. Okay.
Just my feelings coming out of the season.
I know, I got you. Vicky.
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'll say season two, just because, you know, we got the traveling to other worlds and Jay Garrick and all of that. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I was not anticipating this. I'm going to skip Kate. I'm going to go to Dan now. Dan.
Well, both seasons kind of suck ass, but I think I might like... I think Jesus I might like three just a little bit better.
Okay.
Well, maybe suck ass is a bit of an overstatement, but they're squandering the potential of a mostly solid cast, good effects team, all this other stuff, and just, you know.
I was going to say, it ended up in your top 10 of the year. How could it couldn't suck that much ass? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I only watched 10 shows.
I know. I know. That's what made that so ridiculous. That's right. The Walking Dead didn't show up on the list. So Kate, I'm actually ending with you here.
Season 3, because when the villain was revealed to who it really is, I didn't audibly retch like I did. I found out punches all the time. That right there. A villain who didn't make me hate the storyline when they revealed it. Because after it was revealed Zolomon was Zoom, season two was just a jig shit pile. Season three didn't do that to me. I still enjoyed what came after. So season three, easily.
That's not bad. Yeah.
The tiebreaker.
Okay. Hated the reveal of Zoom in season two. And never thought the big storyline of the season quite recovered from that. Didn't mind the future Barry thing, maybe because I kind of thought that's what it was anyway. I'm just thinking about certain pinpoints in the season. I think I like the crossover. I think I like the craziness of the crossover better. We did get the singing episode too. The Grodd stuff, equal on either side. Shit, HR sucks compared to Harry Wells. Ooh, it is a it's, you know what? It's, if the finale had been better, I would have said season three easily. It's actually closer than it should have been. I'm going to pick season three by a nose over season two, which really isn't saying very much, but it's just slightly better. So hopefully season four will get the show back on track. We shall see. Considering what happened with a certain other show we're going to be talking about, it certainly is possible. All right. Speaking of another show, I think we should talk about that one now.
Are we going to rate The Flash?
Oh, we didn't do... I got our seasons confused. I'm sorry. You know what? It's been a while. This is what happens when we delay the freaking podcast. Yeah, let's grade the finale. I apologize. Who do we usually go? Oh, Vicky. What grade would you give the finale?
I'll give it a 4.5.
Of course. I'm just kidding. Cade?
I'll give it a 4.
Jason?
I'm going to say 3.5.
Ooh, wow. Jason goes negative. Dan?
I'm also going to give it a 4. I mean, there was a lot of dumb stuff in it, but I didn't hate it.
I am also going to give it a 4, just to make Jason the bad guy this week. Yes.
I'm okay with that.
And I'll do a rating for the season.
Ooh.
And I'm going to start off, to give you guys a few more seconds to think about it, I'm going to give it a 3. There was some good stuff, but for the most part, the bad stuff really didn't help with that. So just a decidedly average season. Not spectacular in very many ways. I mean, I can't think of any, you know, I didn't like the musical episode, and I don't, I can't think of a lot of standout moments from the season that would be like, oh God, I'm going to buy the Blu-ray. I'm going to buy it the same day as Jason and watch it right away, but I got to get to this episode first. No, it's just not happening.
It will be funny when we give our grades, and then in a future podcast, you'll have done the tabulations to see if the grade we think we gave it actually matches what we technically gave the show all year, because that's going to be interesting to see what the difference is there.
Well, if we want that to happen, Vicky should probably just give it a 5 now and be done with it.
Vicky?
I will give it a 3.75.
Wow. Did you say 3.75?
Yeah.
Are we giving quarter scores? Did that change?
Yeah, I can't. Well,
I don't mind.
Everybody's done it but me and you, Cade.
I think,
Jason, are you going to talk her out of it before I write it down? Because I'm using.
No, I'm not going to talk her out of it.
Okay.
Cade?
3.5.
Jason?
3.5. As Dan said, there's a lot of bad in the season to go along with the good. And in the end, I just feel like the bad outweighs the good.
That makes sense. 3.25. Because I just love that number. All right, then. Now, we can move on. And, wow, we took a long time with that whole crap. Okay, so let's move on to the next show on our itinerary. And, of course, that would be Arrow. Now, the season finale for Arrow was titled Leah and You, and since I feel I spent way too long on my Flash recap, I'll try to boil this one down pretty damn quickly here. Essentially, Adrian Chase, with the assistance of Talia al Ghul and her minions, and the pointless Evelyn, and later on, the even more pointless Digger Harkness, other than the brief bit about being a traitor, they pretty much kidnapped everyone important in Ollie's life, with the possible exception of Roy and that reporter chick, and let me tell you, I did expect we were going to see Roy at some point. So Ollie creates a new, and I must say more interesting, Team Arrow to get them all back, especially his son, and apparently his son's mom, although that wasn't really made clear until this episode. And that's basically the episode in present day. Battles, twists, and almost everyone is used, or useless, whatever. That's like Mr. Terrific, I would say. Meanwhile, the flashback story seems to be coming to a close, with Ollie finally beating the last of the Russians and breaking even Drago's neck, growing a castaway-esque head of hair and beard, and being found by a Chinese fishing boat. So we do get that nice scene with Moira Queen, which is surprisingly touching after all this time. And, yeah. So, yeah, back to present day is all about Adrian proving that Ollie is a murderer at heart, and trying to set himself up as a suicide by archer kind of a thing. And, of course, it turns out he's got the entire island rigged to explode. So when Ollie merely wounds him to save his son, Adrian blows his brains out, and then Arrow recreates the end credits of Apocalypse Now, which implies they just killed the entire cast of Arrow. Of course, 2 minutes into next season's premiere, we'll see that everyone made it out safe, except for those who didn't get their contracts renewed. Okay, so that's it. So right off the bat, screw what's really important, supposedly important about the finale. Hey, we got Slade Wilson back. Can we just talk about that? So,
yes.
Cade, even though I wish they would call him Deathstroke, but they never will. How'd you feel about the return of, what's his name, Manu Bennett? Or
yeah,
Manu Bennett.
I was so, I cannot express how happy I was to see Slade back on the show. I like the fact he's got a beard and his hair's all coiffed like Deathstroke is without his mask. He's starting to really look like him. And it had one of my favorite moments in Arrow ever is from this episode when Oliver unzips the bag and pulls out his mask. I was like smiling ear to ear because it actually is happening. He's going to be back, even maybe not forever, maybe just this one episode. But for this one episode, Slade was back. He was like he was in the beginning. He's not tanked up on drugs anymore. He's ready to do what he's got to do, and Oliver goes to him. That scene, Oliver going to him, encompasses probably one of the biggest moments in the show, that Oliver goes to his truest villain, the biggest villain he's ever had, really, saying, I need you in this situation. I'm fighting someone I can't deal with on my own. The people on my side can't deal with him. I need you back. Can you help me? Will you help me? And the fact Slade helps Oliver and comes with him is just amazing. And I loved every bit of it.
Yeah, it's really something. Vicky.
Oh, it was fantastic. Just, I just can't say how happy I was. But apparently, Manu Bennett is trying to maybe get some support for a spin-off Deathstroke TV series.
Oh, boy.
I mean, I don't know if that's quite what we need, but... Yeah.
Again, unless they're going to put together a show that's got all these cool villains all on it together, even though it sounds like they'd just be ripping off a Suicide Squad kind of an idea, you know, with like, you know, get Black Siren, get Deathstroke, get Killer Frost all on it, whatever. I'd like to see him be recurring in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I think he works best as a recurring character.
Yeah. Kind of get, I mean, I think there's been some problems behind the scenes with that actor. At times, which has caused some issues. Hopefully that's not the case since they were able to bring him back. But I'd love, give him a contract like they did with I'll just use the character names because I don't feel like trying to remember actor names right now. Oh, well, I remember. Like Wentworth Miller or Katie Cassidy,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
So they can pop up from time to time. I've never liked Katie Cassidy as much as since she died and then she just keeps coming back either as you know, ghost forms or Black Siren. It's like, oh, I wish she had been this cool the first four seasons, you know. But, yeah, Slade Wilson, I thought, bringing him back gave, there's that certain, I hate, it's an overused word by a lot of people, but I'm going to use it as well. There's a certain gravitas to that character and to that performance. I've never been thrilled, but they always make Deathstroke look a bit too... He looks always a bit too bulky for me, you know, with everything he's wearing. I always think Deathstroke should be a bit more streamlined, the way Arrow looks, quite frankly. But that's a nitpick, you know, beyond nitpicks. It's right up there with Yellow Boots. But, yeah, that from the get-go, that was, like, the number one thing in the episode. It's like, oh... I love that they're bringing him into it. I know that was the cliffhanger from the previous episode. So we already knew that going into this. But that was really one of the fun things. I mean, I think we all knew that he hadn't stabbed him in the back, that was kind of a plan all along. But they just played with us to try to make us think otherwise. But I think that's pretty obvious. So then the rest of this episode, which really felt like it was just different showdowns, battles, scenes, you know, back and forth. And I won't do my usual critiquing of choreography or whatever. Some of it looked good, some of it not so much, who cares. But we had a lot. And so it's kind of like take your pick. So, and that's really like most of the episode was about these different showdowns, which were either everything from, you know, doubles to family to lifelong villains and friends turned enemies and all that other kind of crap was all going on throughout the episode. So, in a way, I'm really asking, how did you feel about the rest of the episode? Since that really takes up most of the episode. So, Dan, what was your take on really the body of the episode as far as all these clashes that were happening throughout it?
Oh, I thought it was glorious. The way they did everything was really smooth. I mean, just the way they kept cutting from different stuff. You know, like when he's fighting Drago, they just kept making quick cuts back and forth to what's going on. Like now, and I just, you know, just, you know, I thought the choreography was actually pretty, and the editing was really, really nicely done. But I was very satisfied with what they did here. A lot of really cool stuff, and like when I think back on it, it feels like it was like an hour and a half long episode instead of just 45 minutes. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't, but it just has that good feeling that we're just that kind of feeling we don't get like from, you know, an Arrow episode. You know, at least we never would have thought about it before this season.
I think a lot of Arrow episodes, even if we give them decent grades or whatever, at least for me, I always feel there was at least 8 to 12 minutes worth of filler in this episode, or time wasting. That didn't happen in this episode. This really felt like it was high octane stuff going on, jam packed from like beginning to end. So it was, I personally think it's definitely one of the best Arrow episodes of the last 3 years for me. If not the best, it's one of the best. I thought so.
Yeah, and it definitely, like, you know, kind of like honors like the better parts of the show, and just kind of like, you know, goes back to Lian Yu and does all this other stuff, and it just never really feels like they're just doing it to be like, you know, hey, look at this, like it's a big, you know, crazy stunt. until like the ending, of course, which is a big crazy stunt. But it just kind of like felt like they're just kind of building up to that, and it kind of works out nicely. And you know, Slade was like has been held at a prison there for a few seasons, so like you know, all the pieces were in place, and it just kind of like just kind of the story just kind of went that way, and they executed it very nicely.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, it, I agree. I mean, they definitely, it felt like a lot of things came together, not just specifically from this season, but even with the rapid flashes in his flashback when he was experiencing the pain of his wounds, which oh, by the way, I love that idea. I think that was just brilliant. Or is that the previous episode? It's been a while. I'm getting them all confused now. I apologize.
Yeah.
I just did that. All right, shut up. They bring it up in this one anyway, so be quiet. Anyway, it worked really well. I personally, one of the things I really liked in the episode, and this is something that had become almost tired before this episode, but I thought they did a nice job with it, and I'm curious what happens next season. The Malcolm and Thea stuff, I thought was really on point. That whole scene with the landmine, I thought was really cool. I mean, I don't think he's dead, but I thought, then again, who the heck knows with the show. But I really enjoyed that stuff like that a lot.
Yeah, it was nice to... It was a culmination. It was a moment where Malcolm truly did show her that he cared, and not in a way where he hurt others. He was hurting himself in a way to prove to Thea that even if she doesn't love him and she doesn't want to recognize him as her father, she is his daughter and he will do what he has to. And that was, and like you said, he probably didn't die. But in that moment, he was prepared to die. He took it upon himself to finally give her that moment of love that I don't think he's ever felt he has given her. It was an unconditional thing he did at that point. It was he who was going to be suffering from it, not her, not her friends. He was the one who was going to feel this so she could live.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to agree. I love that stuff. Though actually, was the actor John Barrowman did say that, you know, he did actually die. So he's not going to be coming back, at least, you know, yeah, that we know of.
So. Or he's basically told to say that right now. So
wow,
there's that. We've seen people say they were dead and they weren't. Jon Snow. So I wouldn't necessarily take John Barrowman at his word there. Although with Legends of Tomorrow, who knows? Doesn't matter if you die; you can keep Captain Coulson coming back. He's been around more since he died than he ever was when he was alive. I think one of the things I really enjoyed about all this was I was probably less interested, and maybe because I just don't like him that much as a character. If I'm going to be honest, by the end of the show, I was probably less interested in the fighting between Green Arrow and Adrian Chase as I was in all these other face-offs. I mean, Nyssa versus Talia al Ghul, that's pretty awesome, especially if you're like a Batman fan. That's pretty awesome. You know, Black Siren versus the new Black Canary, also pretty awesome. And then finally, you know, and they give Quentin something to do finally, which is really kind of cool. Those are some of the highlights I thought as far as all the fighting was concerned.
The Nyssa Talia thing was something I've wanted and hoped we would get since they introduced Talia this season. I'm like, you can't introduce the other daughter and not have a moment where these two come face to face. There's going to clearly be issues between them, and we get to it. And Nyssa showed the growth of her character because she easily could have killed her sister, but she didn't. And that gives us moments where that could come back, but it showed her... And the changes that have come over her since running into Oliver and the team and becoming one with them and disbanding the league. This was a moment that showed that ultimate growth by letting her sister live, because there was no reason to kill her sister at that point.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Go on, Vicky.
No, I was going to say, I absolutely love just all the different fights in this episode, because when they were fighting in that temple, whatever it was, you could kind of just see the differences in the fighting styles for each character. You know, like Obviously, you know, like the assassins, trained people were, you know, very, very fluid and such, but, you know, Renee was very brawler type and just all that. I thought that was a really good touch. And then obviously, you know, the Canary versus, Siren was really cool because you had them both using their cries at each other, which was really fun. And then Quentin knocks her out.
just to sound a negative note here. So quick question. So which character felt like the biggest waste of space in this episode? Is it Digger Harkness or Curtis?
Curtis? yeah, Curtis. Yeah.
Curtis was, the Digger Harkness thing just seemed pointless to me because they didn't really utilize him at all. It's Captain freaking Boomerang, and it doesn't really do anything to him. But Curtis was like the epitome of useless in this episode. I mean, it's almost like, yeah, I guess if you don't have your T-spheres, you really are useless. I mean, I think Felicity would be better in a fight than you would be right now. So, yeah, it was kind of like, I don't think they could figure out what to do with him. So it's a minor thing. It didn't take up that much time in the episode because there was so much else going on, but it did stick out. I was like, Curtis, you're not really doing much here. Waste.
There was one thing I found during the fight that was really fun is if you're watching, everyone's like fighting their own little person, and then you get to Slade and he's fighting three guys at the same time. It's like, okay, now we can definitely see who the toughest one here is.
I forgot about that.
I'll remind you, you said Curtis was useless when next season we realized that, like, he kept all the bombs that would have hurt anybody from going off, like, you know.
Yeah, Curtis programmed them. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be next season. In this episode, he still sucked. I don't care about what happens next season right now, so still big dope. Still ruining a great character named Mr. Terrific, so there we go. Yeah, that's when I do bring the confidence. Like, yeah, when you do a shittier version of a really cool character, I can't really let it go. You had mentioned the flashback. So now, by the time we got to the end of this flashback, this is him coming back to America, coming back to Star City. Now, I seem to have a faint memory they've already said what they were going to do, but I'm kind of forgotten, so probably our intrepid reporter will remind me. But I'm just going to ask, do you think that's it for these flashbacks? Or do you think we're going to be diving into other characters and time periods with them? What do you think they're going to be doing here?
That I actually haven't gave it any other thought. I wouldn't mind seeing like a series of, like, you know, young Drago, played by Dolph Lundgren, of course, because he's super, super buff. Maybe that'd be kind
of
cool.
Maybe he can get Kurt Russell's makeup guy from Guardians of the Galaxy to make him look the way he did in the 80s or something.
You know, we could assume that character is like actually like an aged Drago who just like, you know, did some roids, didn't get his whatever, and then he ended up taking over the underworld, that kind of thing. So,
oh my god, Kate, what do you think about the whole flashback idea?
I think we could definitely see other characters' flashbacks, but even in this season, we saw a flashback to something that happened in season one that happened off camera.
Yep,
it's possible. We will get similar things like that. A scene from a previous season that would fill in something in his past that leads to something in the future. I don't think they're going to completely abandon it, but they don't have to rely on it as much as they are now to fill in the 5-year backstory, since we kind of have our 10-year full circle now completed as of the end of this season.
Yes.
But they definitely will have probably flashbacks at certain key points or something, and maybe just a scene or something to help an episode, but probably not like an entire season's worth of secondary story done with flashbacks.
I think that what I'm hoping is that it frees them up so that, yeah, not every of the 23 episodes has to have a flashback. They had, as I pointed out, there was at least one episode this season that had no flashbacks.
Yeah.
Which was nice. I'd like to see, you know, at least half the season not have flashbacks. And yeah, I think it'd be cool to do it. It doesn't have to be, it could be something from a previous season that we never saw with these characters. It could be something about the villain character or exploring someone else's backstory that we haven't gotten much. Hey, if they, for example, if they were to bring back, Ragman. I would love a flashback getting into his origins, because we've just been told about it, but we never saw it. That's something I think we want to see. Maybe they don't want to spend the money on it, but whatever. But other than that, you know, I'm very happy that at least we don't have to get the buildup of Ollie getting here, because, okay, now we're done with it. Now we can move on to other things, hopefully. Was there anything else that stuck out about this episode, good, bad, or otherwise, or the season overall that anyone wanted to mention?
I was just going to add that I really enjoyed how they did the flashbacks this season, or this episode, because, you know, there was this touch on earlier, but kind of like the continuing shots where he was running in present day, and then we go to him running in, you know, 5 years ago, or similar shots like that. And that scene when he's on the boat and he's calling his mom was just heartbreaking, and they're both in tears. That was fantastic, just to see everything finally come full circle.
Yeah, I was really happy to see her again. Yeah, seeing Myra Queen again, that was kind of cool. I thought every single character was going to show up in this episode at one point. I was like, I thought Roy was going to show up. I thought Tommy was going to show up. I thought Katana was going to show up. But, you know, they didn't go that crazy, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I should say.
I thought the boat like battle stunts were kind of cool too. Speedboat like, you know, fight that they had.
Oh yeah, okay, I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, with Oliver and Prometheus. That was pretty cool.
Prometheus. I feel like once he's not wearing the mask, he's never Prometheus. It's kind of like Zoom.
Right.
Either he's Zoom or douchebag guy. I am glad that they killed him off, because again, good villain for the series, but I have to admit, by the time we got to the end, I found him kind of tiresome, because it was just the same thing over and over with him. I just wanted to be done with it already. So I'm glad that I'm pretty sure there's no bringing that character back.
No, yeah, he doesn't make a good recurring villain. A season's villain, yeah, it works that way, but he can't keep coming back, because then it doesn't work.
Cool. Vicky?
And then kind of just talking about kind of the fight choreography when they were fighting in the forest near the end there, Oliver did this thing that like Black Widow always does with, like, she gets the you know, he gets his legs around his neck and like pulls him down. I thought that was really cool to see.
You just wanted to work in a Black Widow reference. Come on.
Well, no, because it's like I kind of really only ever see her do that, but at least, you know, kind of, you don't see a whole lot of people do that. So it was just kind of fun to see a guy do that move too. So.
You need to watch more WWE, Vicky. Because,
well, yeah, I don't.
Okay.
So I'm saying in the stuff that I watch.
There we go. All right. Since you started before, unlike The Flash, I don't think we need to do the season compare and contrast, because I think it goes without saying.
Yes,
this is our favorite season since at least in season two, because that's the way I look at it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I still think season two is my favorite, but this world's better than the previous two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
World's better. I mean, I like Damian Dark as a character, but he was much better on Legends than he ever was on Arrow, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Really nice to see the show kind of make a comeback by its fifth season, which usually it's too late at that point, so it's kind of nice to see.
And it was mediocre enough last season where we can actually, like, take hope that, like, some of the other shows that are stumbling a little bit, like, you know, we don't have to give up hope. Maybe they'll actually, like, be awesome at some point, so we can just, you know,
that's true,
ride out the storm.
I mean, look how much we've liked Legends more season two than season one, and look how much Arrow has improved. And that's a show that had, you know, like 60 whatever. Let me add it up. So whatever, a whole lot of episodes before they got to the season. So yeah, it gives us hope for The Flash to find his footing, and
Yellow footing.
Yellow footing. See, just the fact that Future Flash didn't have yellow boots says it all. Anyway, it says nothing. It says nothing. Do we want to throw out our grades for the season then?
Yeah, did the episode first in the season?
Is that how we did it before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode first? Okay.
Episode first.
So, Vicky, episode first, grade.
Five.
Okay. Cade?
This is getting my other six.
Wow, I forgot you had a six.
I had a six. I have to say, as I've watched, I sped through our season one and two before season three, and this is the best I've seen Arrow since season two. It was easily a six. The little things that were a problem are so minuscule compared to what was good about it. I don't care.
That works. Okay. Dan.
This is also going to be my the only six that I use this season. I just I really liked how they put this one together, and it definitely was a good way to close off the season, as well as to give us something to think about it during the off season. So awesome. Nicely done.
Wow. Did I use up both of my sixes? I don't remember. It's been so long. I know I used one of them because I designed the whole damn thing.
Yeah, I think you just used one and used like a 5.5 at some other point.
That's right, because I was like, I can't use it. Well, you know what? I only have two shows left this season to talk about, so and it's not like I can reuse it next year. Yeah, you know what? Hell with it. I enjoyed this so much, I'll give it a 6, too. It was just a great way to end what was really a much improved season. And I actually think they did a better job at the finale than I was even expecting them to do, because I was really into it from moment one. Going to get a 6 for me, too. So, I guess now the season, so we can flip back around. So, Vicky, if you're going to grade the season as a whole, what would you give it?
I would give it a 4.5.
4.5. Okay.
Because there was some definite issues.
Well, yeah. Wild talk. Anyway. Well, yeah, now I'm thinking of all the issues now. Quentin, Thea, okay. Cade. Great.
I'll give it a 4.5.
Dan?
I'm going to give Arrow a 5. I really, really liked what they did with the season. Even though, Chase wasn't the most, super compelling villain, I thought he was used in such a strong way where they were able to, have Oliver have some character growth and Oliver have some really crappy stuff happen, and it just felt, so much better than they've, done when they've tried to do that over the last couple of years. So that plus the huge turnaround in quality between seasons, it's good for me. I even like Mike Mad Dog, even though I'm not going to call him by his correct name. I'll just call him Mad Dog. Buford Mad Dog, Renee, who fucking knows his name?
Although I joke about it, actually, the Wild Dog stuff actually doesn't really bother me all that much. But I do have some issues with the season. The certain characters were kind of wasted throughout the entire season. And I can't really let that go. I mean, Thea or Quentin just felt like they were just kind of floating and not really used for much of anything. But other than that, but especially compared to the last two seasons, wow, huge improvement. I'm going to go with the other two here. I'm also going to give it a 4.5. So it's a full 1.25 higher than Flash. So fuck you, Flash. So, and I'm wearing my Flash t-shirt too. It's so sad. But, 4.5 for me. Okay, well, we've just got one more show to go, and I think it's a show that only me and Vicky watched. So this will probably be a briefer segment than the previous two. Absolutely. So is anyone going to bail out now, or are you guys going to stick around so we can say goodbye together, or what?
I'm going to hang around.
I'm going to hang around.
I'm gonna mute myself. I might leave, but if I'm still you know, I'll check back in. So if not, good night or good morning, because it's morning now.
Okay, Dan. Maybe your cat can come by. We haven't heard. The cat yet. Anyway, so let's get to it, Vicky. Our show that you and I are gonna be talking about. Of course, it's Supergirl. Now, the title of the season finale of Supergirl was, and you had to love this title if you've been following politics over the last several months, Nevertheless, She Persisted. Might be their best title of the season, quite frankly. So let me dig into the recap here, and so certain people could hear what they missed. Oh boy, right off the top, we pick up with a battle of the Kryptonian cousins, Kara versus Kal-El, who's been dosed with brain-altering silver kryptonite. And since this is her show, somehow Supergirl wins that battle. And, well, Superman is relegated to Guardian-like status for the rest of the episode. I kid. They also seem to waste a lot of time hanging around instead of immediately taking care of business, but whatever. But after a trip to the Fortress of Solitude, Superman digs up some info on the rituals of Daxam, which essentially add up to a one-on-one challenge between Rhea and Supergirl. Meanwhile, Lillian Luthor is trying to get back into her daughter's good graces and comes up with a plan to rid the Earth of the Daxamites once and for all by having Lena reconfigure a weapon her brother Lex had actually created to use against Superman, which would essentially dust the atmosphere with just enough lead particles so it's still safe for human and, I assume, animal life, but deadly for dim Daxam folk. Eventually, Supergirl does win the fight, but the weapon is activated anyway, which means Lionel has to leave Earth as well. By the end, oh boy, yeah, Vicky's going to be so proud of herself, we finally do get absolute and complete confirmation that Cat Grant does know indeed that Kara is Supergirl. Gold star for you, Vicky. Mon-El apparently, however, gets pulled into some weird wormhole to who knows where. Maybe he'll show up on Deep Space Nine, I don't know. And then we get a flashback to 35 years ago, revealing that someone else left Krypton as it was going kaboom. Or should I say something, because whatever it is, clearly likes blood. And what perfect timing. That wasn't my stomach, that was somebody's kitty, Dan's kitty. So, alright, let's talk, we want to talk about the episode now. So, Vicky, we don't need to break the sucker down, I don't think. Let's just talk about the episode, good, bad, otherwise. What'd you think of how they handled this finale?
It was fantastic.
It kind of was it?
I loved all the fights. I think maybe my favorite was not necessarily Kara versus Rhea. It was Kara versus her cousin.
Yeah, I mean that alone made the episode notable. It's like, holy crap.
Oh, it did. And obviously, yes, I'm very pleased that she was able to be her cousin.
Yeah,
And he willingly admitted it, that he was at full strength when she beat him.
Bullshit. No, I know.
Come on.
No, how's that? Look, I enjoyed it, and basically, the show is Supergirl, so Supergirl has to win. I get that. But it
couldn't possibly win.
It's got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with who's been doing this longer. It should, at the very least, it should have been to a standstill, you know. So, and actually, I think, Kate, are you listening? You're listening, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am. I feel at some point that they've actually, and now I'm just going to comic book crap just for a moment. There has been some talk at some point of really like the different power levels of even different Kryptonians. Because I've not gotten the impression that Supergirl whatever version it is of her, and there's been many of them, so it gets really confusing, actually. It's like Hawkman with there's like 18,000 different Supergirls, apparently. I never got the impression that she was actually on the exact same level as Superman. Now, am I wrong about that, or
No, because that's pretty much like, that's been the reference, because even with like Zod and whatever hit the female companion of his is, they are as powerful or more powerful than Clark as Kal-El. Like when Superman fights Zod or whatever her name is, he has to really struggle to fight them because they are more powerful Kryptonians than he is. Right. Like they're not all just imbued with the sun to have the same power level. So like there is a hierarchy that she's more powerful than most people on Earth, but Clark, due to whatever the Kryptonian, he is stronger than her. But like Theora is stronger than Clark actually is.
Right,
she's
right,
been able
right.
to fight him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. I remember that now. I mean, because otherwise, I mean, it sounds like a goofy thing to reference, but there have been countless, and it's like one of the most obvious and common things you'll see like online or wherever. How many times have you seen lists of who are the most powerful, blah, 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 whether it be just DC or DC and Marvel or combined, whatever. And, you know, and Superman's always in there somewhere. He's not always number one. Sometimes they pull out a couple weird Marvel characters and say they're stronger. Oh, Sentry, fuck you, whatever. I don't see Supergirl in there. And I always kind of wondered about that. And then I remember I was talking to some, like, huge comic book geeks, and I was like, oh, that's because she's not supposed to be on the same level as him. I was like, all right. Now, could that go back because of the whole, you know, could it be a gender thing that manifests over the years? Yeah, that's possible. Although those same lists kind of sometimes put Wonder Woman over ahead of Thor, so I don't know if I want to say those lists are supposed to be sexist or not. Anyway, I didn't mind that she beat him because it made sense. I kind of attribute it more like he's also not in full control of his faculties, the way I'm looking at it, so I don't think he was fighting quite the way he normally would. The comment he made, I just thought that was just a show that they've kind of gone to such non-subtle lengths to, you know, about certain issues, be it be political or gender or whatever, and 99% of the time I'm like, yep, I'm right on with you guys, I agree with you, oh, cool. That seemed to be a bit too obvious to me. It's like, yeah, you didn't need to do that, but I'm fine with it. It seemed a bit too, I didn't believe it, if it makes any sense. Anyway, back to the episode, and thanks for chiming in there, Kate. The thing I loved about the battle also is, I don't know if they saved money on a couple other episodes, but it looked good. Because just think back to early season one Supergirl fights and how they would sometimes be like, you know, looked a little goofy. And they had bigger budgets when they were on CBS, too. But here, I really thought the way they handled the both of them fighting each other looked really good. I was very impressed with it. And that, to me, I know that sounds like a dumb thing, but I think that means a lot when you're dealing with these super-powered characters, because if it looks just a little bit too fake or cheesy, it kind of takes you out of it a little bit, I think. I thought it was really done really nicely. So, are you going to take your bow now for the whole Cat Grant thing? Because I think you've been saying all along you thought she knew, and I know I've been saying no, but no, she doesn't know. She should know, but she doesn't know.
Yeah, I did appreciate getting confirmation on that.
Yeah, that was awesome. Well, let me ask you something. So, by the end of the episode, because the whole thing that, you know, she went and did her, I mean, she didn't just do a walkabout. She went all over the globe and did whatever the hell she was doing.
Yeah, lived in a yurt.
yeah. Right. That woman's living in a yurt. I don't think so.
She had Wi-Fi. Yeah, didn't have Wi-Fi.
So here's my confusion. And maybe I haven't heard anything about it yet. And maybe we'll hear something about it between now and this beginning of next season. It seemed to me that when she comes back, it seems like she's back. You know what I mean? She did her thing, and she's back. But we know behind the scenes the whole issue is that, what's her name? Why am I drawing a blank on her name?
Callista Flockhart.
Yeah, thank you. Wow. It's because the cat and Callista thing was confusing me. I was trying to remember. I was like, ka, ka, ka. Anyway. I know the whole thing is like, well, she lived, you know, I guess she probably lives in, she doesn't mind working in Los Angeles, but she didn't want to have to do stuff in Canada, because you basically have to end up living there for a significant amount of time, and maybe Mr. Ford wouldn't like that, I don't know. Because I don't think he lives in L.A. Doesn't Harrison Ford live in, like, Montana or something like that? Or am I just imagining that?
Somewhere in Wyoming, from what I recall, that he moved to.
And if she's... they're married, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, I think they've been married all this time. So I'm assuming that's where she lives, not in L.A. I don't know. I don't know what her personal life is. But I'm hoping this means that she will become a full-time member of the cast again. Because, wow, is the show so much better when she's on the damn show? I mean, I think the show needs her. I truly think the show needs her, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's what I'm not quite sure about either. I was just discussing this with someone else, and yeah, because it they imply that she's back, but I don't know exactly how the logistics of that would work. I mean, I would. If they can't get her back for a full season, I would prefer her to be a little be more recurring than she was this season, because she basically appeared in the first episode and the last two episodes.
Yeah, she bookended the season, but she didn't really, you know. And in between, we had, you know, nothing, you know. I want her to be on the show. I want to see her interact with Snapper Carr. I think those would be really fun scenes to see. That's what I want to see happen on the show, you know. I think there were a lot of missteps this season, or things that didn't work, but I still think the ingredients are still here for this show to really be something that people won't bail out on while they're watching it during the season, like some of our podcasting pals here. And I think chief among them is that get Cat Grant back. You know, figure out what you're doing. Really figure out what you're going to do with the James Ellison character once and for all. If you're going to, you know, whether this Guardian thing is really something we're going to keep moving forward with or not. If they pull it off, I'm fine with it. But I'm quite frankly, I'm okay if they make him go bye-bye too. I don't think I haven't heard that he's leaving the show. I heard someone else is leaving. Who's leaving the show, Vicky? Isn't someone leaving?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the guy who, you know, plays Monel.
No, I think, I believe there's a female, well, yeah, who cares? No, well,
Team Grath, you mean?
There's a female character leaving the show.
Yeah,
Is it
the sister's girlfriend.
Yeah, it's Maggie, yeah.
Maggie.
Oh.
I think she's not completely leaving. I think she just got downgraded to recurring.
Oh, okay, good then.
So.
Wait, she wasn't recurring before? She was actually a full member of the cast?
She must have been.
Ugh. Okay, well, good, make her recurring. Because whatever, didn't really add much. And I know that they've already kind of told us who the big villain's going to be for the next season as well.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued by that. It's the character who's come about in the comic books only in the last several years, from after like the new 52 thing that happened with DC Comics. The character's name is it Rain?
I believe. Yeah.
Okay, Rain. Who is? I guess it's another Kryptonian. Is that what she's supposed to be? Because I haven't read the new 52 stuff.
I didn't think she was. From what I recall, she's like of a planet who had the same thing happen as Krypton, but I don't recall her in the comics being a Kryptonian. But
I wonder if it's like a similar, maybe it's from the same galaxy or something. So she might have similar capabilities or something. I don't know. I have no idea. But I thought But my impression was the flashback implied that what we were seeing was happening on Krypton. Vic, is that what the word said on the screen? I don't remember, Vicky.
I'm sorry. What?
Do you remember at the end of the episode when we got that, you know, 35 years ago flashback?
Yeah.
Did it say if it was on Krypton, or did they not indicate?
Yeah, it was. I think they. It was kind of implied because it said the day Krypton died.
Oh. Although they could be being cute, and it's not. They're not actually on. Just like Daxam ended up being destroyed because of Krypton. It could be like another nearby planet or something like that. It could be what they're doing. But it was implied it was Krypton. I guess we'll find out next season. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'll say I really enjoyed the episode overall. There's things about it I thought were a little clunky. I kept thinking, all this stuff is going on, and you guys are just in Superman. Like, that was my issue with Superman, quite frankly. If all this stuff is going on the streets of National City, he wouldn't just be hanging out at the DEO and then deciding, oh, we should go do something about it. He'd be doing something. He's Superman, you know? And I know it's like, oh, if you do that, then you can take care of everything. I don't care. He should still be doing something. But we did get at least a little bit of Superman and John Jones working together.
Yes.
So that was
super awesome. Yeah, they finally brought John Jones back.
Yeah, finally.
They had him wake up. And it was nice. It was good that they brought McGann back. I was happy about that.
Yeah, but they brought her back to kind of help bring him out of it? Is that what ended up happening?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she basically like brought him out of it because she could, like, he was like reaching out to her telepathically or whatever.
Okay. I mean, again, there's so much cool stuff they can do on this show. I want them to really get their stuff together. I'm not cursing since it's just me and you here. And really, you know, put together like a really solid season for the next season. Cause this, a bit of a bumpy ride. I think there's a lot of good stuff that happened this season and there's a lot of stuff that was kind of like, whatever. By the time it was all over, did I really care that much about the Mon-El stuff? I thought it worked a bit in this episode, but I can't say I care that much over the course of the season. I was kind of 50, as at best 50-50 on it. So I'm curious what happened to him, but I'm not that curious. anything else that really stood out to you about the episode?
One moment that was like just super cute when Clark first came back to the DEO and Wynn's just like flipping out and over him. He's like, oh no, yeah, I remember you. I thought that was kind of a good character moment because Superman is the kind of person who would like, oh yeah, you know, I remember you. You're da 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 da.
He's Superman.
Yeah, he's that considerate type of person that would kind of, you know, make a point to, you know, remember people. And
yeah, he's not Green Arrow.
I think there are just some really good just character moments between, you know, like obviously Kara and Clark and stuff, but then, you know, at the end with Kat and Kara when they're talking in her office. And, you know, I really liked that line she said that, you know, the thing that makes women strong is that we have the guts to be vulnerable. We have the ability to feel the depths of our emotion and we know that we'll walk through the other side. I think that just really struck out to me as a really good moment between them.
Yeah, that was. I mean, in some ways, it's in a weird way, Cat Grant almost becomes like a surrogate parent for not that she needs yet another mom, but you know, all these shows people have like multiple parents and will end up dying, whatever. I don't know. But yeah, that was definitely one of the better moments. One of the best things about these last couple episodes is just the return of Cat Grant. It really just amps everything up. So, again, I'm really, fingers crossed, hoping that she becomes, even if she can't be a regular cast member, at least recur more. You know, at least pop up every other episode would actually be a lot. I guess they can't do that. But my fingers are crossed that she becomes part of the series again, because that would really, I think, help it tremendously, quite frankly. Okay, you want to grade the episode and then the season overall?
Yeah, this one is getting my second six.
Oh, look at you! I forgot you didn't use a six.
Yeah, I actually had to rewatch Supergirl and Arrow earlier today just to, because I couldn't just, I was having a hard time deciding which one was giving it, which I was going to give it to. And so I was like, yeah, Supergirl deserves it.
All right. I'm actually going, but you know, I'm still giving it a good one. I'm giving it a 5. So I haven't handed out those too many times. And if Arrow hadn't, I don't know if I would have given it a 6. I might have been a smart ass and given it a fraction or something. But I it feels like a solid 5 for me, which probably would be my highest grade for a Supergirl episode this season. Or I don't know if I'd given any of the 5s to the show. I might have. Who cares? So season-wise, though, because this is something I'm curious to hear now. What would you, because you know, you're one of the people who stuck with it from beginning to end. Maybe the only one until Kate catches up. What are you going to give this season, though?
I'm going to give it a 4.5 because overall it was really good. But you know, obviously it did have its issues. Finding what to do with James. Some of this, you know, Snapper stuff was the absence of Kat, and then you know stuff with Maggie.
Oh yeah, the Maggie stuff. Well, I don't feel I can be quite as generous as you with it. I'm thinking about what I gave the Flash now. Wow, am I gonna rate Supergirl higher than the Flash or lower? Ooh, that's a toughie. I'm gonna give it a 3.5 for the season. Only because there were just too many things that bothered me, whether it be how certain characters were used, or also the fact that for too long a stretch of the season, it felt like it didn't have a direction. It's like, oh, it's going to be, it's the Cadmus stuff, oh, maybe it's not. Oh, it's the stuff, and also, here's another reason. You had a show that had Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain on it, and you didn't figure out a way to get them in a scene together. Boo. Yeah. Boo, boo, boo. And the fact that you brought back the whole Cadmus thing towards the end, even more so, like, really? You couldn't figure out a way to do it? You couldn't? Bad writers. Bad, bad, bad. So, there. I would have given it a 4, but that gives it... That alone.
They really should have brought him back for the end of the season.
How did they blow that one? Anyway, okay, so we are finished with Supergirl, which means we are finished with all 3 finales, which means anyone who's still listening in can pipe in now as we get to the close of this podcast.
I'd like to say that I helped make up for Kat not being on the show by letting my cat be on their podcast.
Jesus. I'd let my cat be on the podcast, but he's literally been sick all day, and I don't know what's going on with him. So, yeah, probably going to die. Anyway, so I thought initially that this was going to be our last big-ass podcast for a while. I feel like we probably will get together soon enough again, just so, you know, number one, Dan can tabulate the scores for these different seasons, see how close they came to how we graded them, which will be such exciting podcasting for people to hear. I'll be like, oh my God. You know. And maybe if some of us have seen Wonder Woman at that point, we can also talk about that a bit, or maybe some other random things that may occur to us, or maybe we'll have gotten some news about future stuff on the seasons we can chat about, or who the heck else knows, whatever. Or maybe we can spend an entire episode, half the episode, just talking about the Justice League Action cartoon, because it's so good, and, you know, Jason and Dan can track it down, because it's all online anyway. It's really worth it, guys. It's I'll tell you right now, it's better than all the shows that we just talked about. It's just so much more fun.
Yep.
And every episode's like 10 minutes. No time at all. But it's been kind of, although it's been a bumpy ride, trying to cram all these shows into one podcast, I do think I'm probably, I'm kind of coming up with an idea to change things around for next season, which will dramatically reduce the workload on all of us, especially Dan and me, which is what I really care about. No, just kidding. So, just so you know, that's probably anticipate that it's going to be a situation where we're probably going to be podcasting less. But therefore we can have a podcast that can run if it runs, if it hits the 2 hour mark, who cares? Because I think it's going to be something where we cover more in one podcast but not do it on a weekly basis. Cause I think it's also something that we have a lot of scheduling issues as well between when it's hard to manage five people. And everyone's different schedules, whatever is, and we don't know what our lives are going to be like in this fall, is whatever. But I'm kind of thinking of the way it's sort of like when me and Jason did Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and we did it at just certain junctures in the season, and we covered a number of episodes each. It would be even more streamlined than that because I don't even want to separate it into episodes. It just might be something along the lines of where we are right now with The Flash or Arrow or Legends or Supergirl, whatever. So it might be
that
just
has the that has a benefit too of like if something isn't worth talking about, we're just gonna forget about it and not bring it up anyway, so it ain't gonna, matter.
Yes. It's almost like more looking at the season as a whole. So in a way it'll be like, say the first one would be, oh, now we're gonna talk about what's going on with The Flash, and maybe there's been three, maybe there's been four episodes, and we can, and that way it's easy just to do, just go around the room and they can just talk about what they like, what's been going on so far. It might be less likely for people to repeat what each other might be saying, so it might be just more of a general conversation, which I think I really would like to strive for. Again, I just feel it might be easier. That way, also, if we can arrange a certain time, whether it be once or twice a month, whatever, it might be easier for everyone to be able to adhere to it and make time for it. So that's the idea I'm kind of batting around in my head. We've got a few months to think about it, but I think that's where I'm leaning right now. I think it's too much to do. It turns out to be 22 or 23, whatever it is, these podcasts that are covering three or four times, every week. I think it's just become a bit too much to do for me personally. Okay?
It sounds good to me.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't rehearse any of that, so I didn't write any of it down, so it's all off the top of my head. So I probably just single-handedly pushed us to the two-hour mark. Oh, maybe not. Oh, whatever. So... Before I do anything else, let me do the little wrap up thing here. And then anything else you guys want to say, you can say right after that. If you enjoyed this podcast, you will enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page. It's the Serious TV Drama Pod. Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Oh, I'm tired. You can find us on Facebook that way. Like the page, join the conversation about shows like all the superhero shows, as well as shows like Better Call Saul, Fargo, Twin Peaks, and so on. You can also track us down on iTunes the very same way. Type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Subscribe to the feed, as well as rate and review us there. We could sure use some more ratings and reviews. It's been quite some time. And finally, next, you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. And finally, you can also find us on the website that Vicky is a... Are you an employee? I don't know what to call that.
I call myself a writer. Right. I mean, I'm technically not really getting paid, so...
You're a saint.
We just call you hostess. You're the hostess of that website.
With the mostess? What site is it again?
PopCultHQ.com.
That's PopCultHQ.com. Okay, just making sure. Not pop culture. Jason, go ahead and say it. Just get it out of the way.
This was episode 186.
Assuming I don't put the other one up.
You don't put the other one up.
Yes, no, this is going to be 186. Of course it is.
Okay.
I think Dan's already sent me the other file already. So.
Yeah, it's on the way.
Better Call Fargo.
Yes, even though this week was just Fargo and Twin Peaks, but good Lord, there wasn't more than enough to talk about those two.
Twin Fargos.
Especially Twin Peaks. Oh, boy. Okay, so it's been a fun run. Yeah, but again, this was going to have more, I was going to have more of a season closer planned conversation for the end of this podcast, but since we're going to get together again fairly soon, I guess it's not. So, again, it's been fun doing this podcast with you guys so far over the last year, last couple years, I guess now. So thanks for making time when you can. I know sometimes it can be difficult. And thanks to everyone out there for listening. So that's all I have to say. You guys can chat it up or say goodnight, whatever you want to do right now.
I think it's only been fun the last 6 months. Ever since Jason got that squeaky chair fixed, it's been a lot better, a lot more fun.
I'm not sitting in that chair tonight, by the way.
Just laying in a beanbag on the floor.
Oh, is that a beanbag? I just thought he had really big. Anyway. Yes, I'm remembering issues of squeaking chairs and breathing heavily into the mic, so I'm glad that we've curbed a lot of that so far. So good for you guys. It took you guys just 2 years to be professional. Awesome. Like me and Dan, because we're real professionals.
Anyway. Yeah.
the cat's more professional than we are. Anybody else? Hello?
Nah, have a good night. Good night, everybody. See you in a couple months or next week. Who knows?
See you soon. All right. Good night, everybody.
He's the monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle. Yes, indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat. Beat the speed of light, and you can't beat that. Mighty Flash,
Flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash, mash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fastest human. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the unbeatable Flash.
His real name, works with the police, justice is his aim. Wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it when danger threatens.